Welcome to the Humans in AI podcast, powered by AI Frontier Network. I'm your host, Flor Laorga. Each episode, we dive into the human story shaping artificial intelligence through the journeys of entrepreneurs, builders, and leaders. We explore the insights, challenges, and visions for the future of AI and humanity. Let's uncover the human side of AI together. Hi, Dag. Nice to meet you, and thank you very much for joining to the Humans in AI podcast. It's hosted by AI Frontier Network. I'm the host too, as well, Flor. Yeah, let's start. I know you've been in this industry in the educational learning for a long time, and you started a learning platform, and then now you're president of a very big company, CGS. Yeah. Would you like to tell me a little bit about what is that background, a bit of story behind that?
So thanks very much for having me here. I'm pretty excited about being here. But so I've been, again, like you said, I've been in the learning business since 1994. Been in this business a long time. I've met a lot of fantastic companies and great people. And literally the strategy has been with my company and CGS is that we always try to look at learning, not from a learning point of view, but from a business outcome point of view of our customers. What does our customers need? In a lot of cases, companies are going to buy learning for the sake of learning. They're going to do it because they want to increase their customer service opinions. They want to increase their revenue or reduce their costs. And that sort of drives what their people need to do to be able to achieve it. And so that never has changed. People always want to get to the business outcomes. It's just the different methodologies that we're seeing has modified. But at the end of the day, we just want to work with companies and for them to get better.
Okay, so as your approach with customer first approach, I would like to ask you about, I read a lot of things about you, but I would like to point out the hallelujah moment where you talk about how AI can help to train soft skills to the people. Yep. So what was the idea behind all that? What's the story?
Let me back it up before where we didn't do soft skills. So one of our clients, 7 years ago, we were visiting one of the largest payment processing, and we were looking at bringing in, at that time, virtual reality. And she said, let me show you something. And she showed us this incredible virtual reality scene. And she said, it's for role playing. She said, it cost me $500,000 to build. And she said, isn't it beautiful? We said, yeah. She says, you know what it is? It's a glorified multiple choice. It didn't emulate the real world. At that point, I said, I'm never going near human skills or soft skills. But then a year after that, we basically got invited to the OpenAI Foundation. And at that point, we started to really experimenting with generative AI. And we would do these little approaches, little scenarios. And at that point, we said, holy, we can make personalized, at that time, soft skills scenarios that is not branching, can give real results and allows you to practice safely. At that point, we said, now we'll get into human skills because one, easy to create, easy to measure, and easy to modify. And they were the ones that we said, now we've got something. So that's when we started to move into it.
Like now everything is about AI, right? And everybody wants to automate everything. Actually, now there's these AI agents that people don't want more humans. They just want automate everything through AI agents. But we are still more technology for that still, but we are getting there. What do you think about that? Because you're a person who is want to focus still on the human part, a part that with all the things happening with AI, what led you to that decision that you still keep the human part, even though the AI is more and more relevant out there?
Okay, good question. So it's interesting. And again, it goes back to this gentleman by the name, I think his name was Anders Ericsson. And he was looking at the role of what's called deliberate practice in developing expertise. And I think maybe with Malcolm Gladwell, it said you have to do 10,000 hours of practice to achieve mastery. So I'm saying I'm looking at these basketball players that shoot 1,000 hoops a month, and we get pilots that take hundreds of hours of training, but yet we'll send a salesperson who's got to do a $1 million deal into the environment where he hasn't practiced at all. And we're saying, so why can't we use AI to let everybody practice these human skills? before they actually go into the real workforce and practice with a real person. And that's when we said, hey, AI can be really our pilot, or can be a part of us to help us navigate a lot of these difficult conversations. And whether it's you're having customer service issues, you're having difficult conversations with the patient, or you're trying to do sales, never before has there been a way to be able to quickly practice it safely until AI, or at least we think, till AI came in, that allows you to get into that mastery by practicing over and over again.
So do you believe in AI then, and believe in the way that, do you think it's AI? It's, you said that, but can it really helps to humanity more than harm, that some people say that?
It really helps, but it doesn't take it over. It's more of a great tool. It's like a partner that you can use to bounce your practice ideas off. Whereas before, if you were trying to practice a role playing, you would have to get one of your peers who's quite busy doing other things, and you would try to say, I've got to be able to present to this particular doctor. Can you make on you him? Give me feedback. You just don't have the time. So a lot of people are going into situations at work, situation personally, where they don't know how to act. They don't know what the right approach is. And this is where we think using the tool can make a person grow better. At least that's what we believe anyways. It'll never replace. It's just there to help.
I love your perspective. Actually, yeah, 100%. Talking about role play AI platform that you built, which name is Cicero, if I'm not wrong, right? Would you like to talk about it and share a little bit what's the story about that?
Shameless plug, but yes, I'd love to be able to do that. So we looked at it again, is that, again, we're born on AI, meaning we're not traditional. We don't have older areas. So we said, what we really want to do is put the power of building role-playing scenarios into the hands of the companies that want to use it. We can't be seen as the experts. So let's make it dead simple so someone can build their own scenario in under 15 minutes. Then we said, hey, but we want to make sure that we can do two things. One, we can change the persona to the highest level of emotion to the lowest emotion, but we don't want to determine what that is. We want the end user to. And last but not least, we've got to decide, how do you measure it? We might think you might want to measure it by the number of repeat calls or the number of agreements you get, but we want to leave that into the hands of the individual. So let me give you an example of a lot of role play in companies that we've seen. You might have a sales scenario where you're a pharma rep presenting to a general practitioner regarding a certain drug. With Cicero, we can say you're presenting to Dr. Johnson, a cantankerous general practitioner who is totally data driven, and he's really pissed off because we interrupted his normal golf session. So do you see how unique we can get to this? So what we're saying is, let's empower the people that understand what the best role play would be for themselves and for the company versus waiting to get pre-described situations that experts in the back room think are important to this company. So now with AI, we can do that. And with Cicero, we built it doing that.
So what makes it different from traditional training tools? What is the one thing that, apart from that you use AI and it's more human part, but for example, the people when they use it, how they find it? Are you surprised about how they find it, or it's like, it's completely normal thing?
The first thing is they think it's magical. They can say, I'm actually getting nervous when I'm presenting to, say, a sales prospect, or I'm trying to break bad news to a peer. They said, you first think you're just talking to a computer, you're talking to an avatar, and then it starts pushing back at you. And it's pushing back hard. And now you're almost feeling like you're immersed in a true situation. But the most beautiful thing about this is you're practicing safely. We did a study where 76% of the people we polled said role-playing is critical for skills building. But when we asked those same people how many like doing role-playing, it dropped to 35% because they didn't want to get embarrassed in front of their peers. So we're trying to get something important that people can practice safely in so that they can go into the real world and be very good at what they're doing.
Actually, sounds very good. I would like to try it though.
I'm gonna look on Thursday. I'm gonna send you a link, and
Okay.
I want you to try it and give me some feedback. It'd be fantastic.
Okay, I would love to. Thank you.
No
So,
problem.
no, I'm very interested. If you already told a story before in of how why you focus on hu the human part on the learning process, but you also focus on you rather focus on empathy, connection, like human skills in AI. What was the motivation behind that? This is a pivot moment of your life that really lead you to that mindset, to that to think this is how I want. I don't want to focus on the technical part and that, and because people already have that, I want to focus on the empathy part, the connection, and the human side from AI.
Because in my years, I've seen a lot of people when it used to be called soft skills. It sounded these are just optional skills. What you really need are technical skills. Well, that's not true. To me and to everybody, these human skills are, in fact, more important than technical skills, how you relate to people and it's situational. A lot of people that we ran across think this emotional intelligence or the soft skills, people are born with it, which means, hey, we can't change it. They're born with it. So let's not invest in it. And I'm saying that's not true. You can get better. And if we look at this like we looked at technical skills, but we adopted the human skills, you can and have people get better with it. So they're the things that we see. The other thing is a lot of people say it's really hard to measure if we're being, there's improvement in human skills. And yes, it's more difficult than, hey, have you know how to shoot the ball in the net and here's how you do it. But it's critically important because it's these soft skills that are going to make good leaders great. And it's the same thing when you get into, I was eating today, I'm in New Orleans today, the first time I ever had crawdads. The gentleman who served me basically put on some gloves, took one of my crawdads out, and literally showed me how to open it up. He didn't have to do that. He thought it would be good. So it's those skills, and everybody knows how to open the crawdad, at least they think that. But the way he set this up to keep my mind at ease gave me a good feeling. I said, that's a perfect example of human skills working perfectly. He understood the situation. He wanted to take off the embarrassment I might have of trying to work with them. He guessed it. You look at that human empathy. And then he went and proceeded to show me, and it made my life and it's so much enjoyable that night. So just little things like that you see, you say, that guy could be an excellent teacher.
Great, but how do you measure the human or soft skills? How do you measure? How do you measure it with Cicero? And you kind of, yeah, how do you do it? That's kind of, I think hard skills are easier to measure because you do a good or bad job with your kind of skills that you've learned. But with these skills, how do you measure someone who is very good with empathy? How do you measure that, for example?
So you're right. In a lot of cases, we have our system has a lot of inflections, and what is where people, humans in the middle, have gauged it that there is empathy, and we take those algorithms and put into our solution. So when we hear those inflections, we can measure it. But we also measure in a lot of cases, part of human skills is truth in talking. So our system also allows us to put in fact sheets of drugs. And then when the person like myself goes into these role playing and makes a presentation to a doctor, it's going to compare the facts. So there's some quantitative things you can use. There's inflection in the voice. And then at the same time, it's a matter of we've ingested a lot of book materials on really how to handle difficult situations, and we compare how you handle those difficult situations, whether you're an active listener, you repeat the skills, your voice doesn't go up. All of those things you can put quantitative measures against, but it's not always 100%. So in a lot of cases, as you're testing these out, we run them through a series of different algorithms with different voices, different peoples to make sure there's no bias. And then we say, hey, we've got this right and we've got it correct, and it can be repeatable across multiples using the same type of script.
Okay, that sounds good actually. I was like, how are you gonna measure that? So as a person with all your long journey of the profession as a professional, you've worked with big, very big companies in the world. So How have you seen technology reshaping the human experience of work during, like, from 20 years ago? You've been more than 25 years in the industry already, but how have you seen the reshaping part for the human side?
So again, from my experience, people 25 years ago, companies, and we're very fortunate to be working presently with over 87 of the Fortune 500 companies, and we can learn so much from them. Like, they have so much knowledge, and we get that tribal knowledge and we give it back to our next customer that we have. But they've always have not changed that they have a goal in mind. And the goal is to for certain business outcomes. And then that will determine whether the training, the type of training that you're going to use is not just technical, but in a lot of cases, using these human skills, especially when you get into customer service. But what we're seeing is, in a lot of cases, a gradual migration from learning to knowledge, meaning that, yeah. Yes, it's great to learn, but we need knowledge at the point of doing work. So now you're seeing, as you've got augmented reality and you've got glasses that look like Ray-Bans or a partner with Meta, you're getting information at the time of need and time of requirement. And that's great, but it's also with risk, because are you truly learning, or do you just have just-in-time knowledge and you don't have enough time to grasp it? And I think we need to be very careful, because there's something about learning for the sake of learning that's critically important, and not just getting the knowledge, because the whole idea is you should be learning forever. And that means you have to have fun and enjoy it, not just being given directional knowledge. So I think we're seeing that shift to knowledge. But it's got risk associated with it, especially when, to make a holistic person, it's all about learning all the time.
So, since everything is about learning, which I completely actually agree with that part too, do you have any tips or advice for people what is best a way to learn, or either with the help of AI, without, in every aspect of, now we are talking about more in the learning in the enterprise field, but do you use any trick, let's
So
say?
the one thing I like to go, really, I like going to the web to look at, say, an article that piques my mind. And then I say, I allocate a bunch of time to let it meander, guide me. Because as you get into the document, there's a link that takes you a little bit further away from what that was about. And just let it follow the path of progression. And you'll end up with learning stuff that you would never go out and hunt. You just find it's the same thing. Like I say, why are the bookstores coming back? They're coming back because as you walk by, things that you didn't think were interesting are interesting, but you never thought they were interesting until you saw it. And that's the way, if you pique your interest, let your mind open, start at something that you want, you're focused on, but just let yourself drift into that maze, and you'll find stuff that people might think is not that important. But from building a holistic person is critically important.
Yeah, now since we are talking about how AI is shaping the way people learn and grow, I'm as well wondering, how do you think there's is a bit dangerous? We should have some rules, or that we can keep people aligned with what they want and how they want to learn and grow. Because, well, now with AI and all the things that are out there, sometimes you don't know what if it's real, it's not, it's fake. So, what do you think about that?
So, putting governors or rules around what you can and cannot do is an incredibly slippery slope. And yes, it might seem right, a knee-jerk motion to do this because we're finding out fake information. But literally, all of a sudden, it starts to smell and look and touch and feel like a little bit of censorship, and someone else in the back room is making that decision on your behalf. I think it's very dangerous. I think it's more about the education of people to understand that not what is always correct. That whole there's Shakespeare wrote about appearances versus reality back in 1600s. So it's not everything's not always what it seems to be. It's up to us to be able to work with our peers and have those debates about what we're reading and finding, going back and forth. But like I say, what you don't want is someone in a back room making decisions what we can and cannot have. It's the first step to burning the books that happened in Germany. We can't do it.
Yeah, definitely. I think that you always have to be careful somehow, right? Like, it's no matter of AI or, because before we were with just Google, now it's AI. Every time it's a different name.
It is a different, and that's right. You learn that when you Google, don't look at the first top 10 because they're all ads, right? People get savvy. And there's going to be mistakes. People are going to make assumptions, but we get savvy with technology. We get better with it. And then I think it goes right from when they're doing hieroglyphics in Egypt, and they thought it's going to change the world, and they're going to dictate this. People change.
Yeah, definitely. Now, since we've been like going back and forth, I want to go a little bit as well at the beginning of your journey in the company that now you're the president in. So, how was that transition about? Because you started this learning platform, and then it was immersed with the one that you are right now. So, let's go a bit deeper in the way of, not just professionally, but personally, how was this transition that really make you, I guess that you loved it because you're still there. So what was that transition in your life that really changed you, or it was not that a big change?
So when we first started out, we were creating face-to-face certification-based training, 20 people, 12 people at a time. And then we start saying, hey, we got some pretty good learning that we can transfer to people. Maybe we can expand it to go in this time back in 1998, go on the internet and provide training that way. And then we could reach more people. And we always believed we had a good message and that we had a good way of training. And then very fortunate enough, our company got purchased by Phil Friedman's company, and he believed in learning as a critical cornerstone for everybody to get it, and did some good investments and kept pushing the envelope with myself to be able to say how, like, without losing, if we keep thinking of what we can do for the customer, how can we make it better with different technologies that are out there? And how can we make sure that the results are what our customers want? So this, it's been a migration, and it's, the key is you've got to be open to new methodologies and being able to test it out to make sure it's going to work. So the journey has, maybe it's 25 years for me, but it's, to me, it's just begun, because we're continuously evolving. We're in a very scary part now with AI, things changing incredibly fast. What normally would be 2 to 3 years are now, 2 to 3 months. And we're seeing this really shifts and changes and opinions and applications. So we just got to be prepared. And the key is, if you've got an open mind and you're willing to learn, you will advance. And if you look at these tools as a companion and not as a competitor, you can really advance. You can do better. But you've got to look at it as a tool and not as a threat.
Those very wise words. So let's go now to the future. So from 10 years, in 10 years, not like from 10, like in 10 years from now, what does a human-centered workplace look like to you, knowing that AI, and maybe, AI is going to be basically taking over basically the whole workplace, but let's focus on the human side. What would be perfect for you?
I still hope we are at the top echelon. I hope we are the thinkers, and we can come up with what we really want to do, different approaches, new jobs, what we want to attain. They are getting smarter. It's, you asked me 10 years, don't know. It's moving so quick. I just hope that the human nature in us, that I yet to see these little nuances that we as humans do, that I've yet to see the machines do, but you never know in 10 years. So the key is use them, understand them, and use them as your tool to make you better. You'll do fine.
Yeah, I think future is unwritten, right? So it's difficult to predict it. And more now with all the AI and all the things are changing so fast, it's a bit scary sometimes. We talked as well before about the emotional intelligence. We say that it's something that you really feel like it's very important for us for the future. What is your thoughts about that? Would you mind to explain a little bit in more depth?
I think that is the one area that is human, and that, and we, when you talk about, it's all this emotional intelligence is built through practice, feedback, reflection. All of these things are critical. What we've got to do is, how can we get it front and center versus, oh, I've got to be able to read an analytics report. We've got to make sure that we look that it's the person within, and what we have gets better. And that's that whole curiosity that I think we need to instill in people. And it's that curiosity that allows us to come up with new ideas and to be able to make the world better. And we got to foster that within the organization. And in a lot of cases, how do you do that? We're seeing, it's pretty interesting, we're seeing these internal corporate marketplaces where you spend a lot of time getting great people to come work for you, but literally we got to be looking at how can we get them to do different things that they want to do and keep using their emotional intelligence. So you create these little marketplaces where people can now use AI to say, help me get these skills so I can go within the organization, do something totally different. And then that way, it gives people that better feeling of the company, the fact that they're investing in it emotionally, and it's making for a better, healthier workforce. And that's the stuff that is just starting to come. And because, and again, how do you quantify it? Hey, it costs a lot of money to find great people. And once you have them, invest in them. And yeah, maybe they've reached the pinnacle of where they're going, but let them go laterally to something else. Give them the tools to let them go lateral. Give them the time to find it. Because at the same time, you want to keep those great employees.
Yeah, are you what do you think about the robots? Do you think that they will have this emotional intelligence, this sensitivity like that we have as humans?
It's down the road, I do believe it. I think, it's interesting. I use a derivative of ChatGPT where I talk to it. And it's interesting. You can almost, when you get into these conversations, if you're watching a TV movie and you ask them some questions and you ask about the theme, it's almost like you're carrying this conversation. Now, does he get hurt if you end your discussion? Not yet, but will it? Maybe. I don't, that's the, you're talking about 10 years. That's the area. If it goes to, then all of a sudden, all bets are off, because the last bastion is that emotional intelligence. And that's what we have that's different than the machines. And they get there, probably.
Yeah, actually, it's kind of, whoa. I also believe at some point, even though they don't have experiences, but you can always put a chip and create experiences in their kind of brain. And
Yeah,
from there,
it's we're in an amazing time. No other time has been like this. Like, it's, these changes are coming so fast and furious. And I'm really blessed with, I got really a lot of really smart guys and girls that have a passion for learning, and every day they're coming up with something unique. And you say, gee, it gets you scared because you don't, is your product going to be out of date? But you start looking, you say, holy cow, you got to keep up.
yeah, that's true. Like when it's good people, it's good to keep them. I love that philosophy. So, well, Doug, I would like you, if you want to share anything that we haven't talked or we haven't mentioned as an advice of a personal story or professional story that you would like to share with the audience or anything that you would like to, say.
I talk to so many people that are scared. They don't know what I'm saying. Embrace it, work with it, use it as a tool. If you think of it as, oh, we use Excel every day, we use Word, we drive a car every day, we push a button on an elevator every day. It's, this one's just, it's got a little more. And if we treat that, I'll give you an example. A lot of cases, I write my emails, but I'll go through ChatGPT and say, hey, please write this in an active verse, Flesh Kincaid level 9, to see how that sounds and take a look at those. He says, you, but again, I'm writing it. It's my view, my ideas. It's just making it formalized a little better to the way I like to see it. So again, that's my partner, but I have majority interest in this partnership. That's when I look at it.
Yeah. So thank you very much. It's been great, to be honest. Like, I really enjoy, I really like what you are doing. I think the human part, it's something as humans, I think we are unique in this world. Obviously, like, we built in and create, and we are dreamers. We make things happen, whether we are building the whole world. So I really like the way that you focus in the workplace, but focusing the human side of the people, keep pushing that part as AI, as the friend, as a friend, as a companion instead of a threat. And I think that's very wise and smart if you want to survive in this new era of technology and innovation. And right now, just if we are already in the future. So it was great to have this talk with you. It's been great. Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Humans in AI podcast. We are here to spotlight the people making AI more human, one story at a time. See you in the next episode.